This is ESPN Radio.
We got number one in the books. And as we lined up and kicked off for week one in the NFL, a funny thing happened. The things we thought we knew got challenged early and often. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80 and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and we're going to have to talk to some people to make it make sense over the course of today. We got Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, who's going to be on a multicast for Monday Night Football tonight, along with Dan Orlovsky and the rest of their crew. Tyler Foljam going to get our money right for that matchup. Jason Fitz going to get us ready for the first game with fans in the stands at Allegiant Stadium out there in Las Vegas.
How about that?
Ooh, my God. I'm worried about Fitz surviving this one, Chris, first and foremost.
Uh-oh. Okay, tell me why. I know you got some inside info. What's up?
I mean, you look at – well, first off, Jason Fitz is from Vegas originally. He's been a lifelong diehard Raiders fan, and – I think he's going to work his way into that club seating. Have you seen in Allegiant, they've got down by the field, they've got almost like a club set up with like VIP tables and bottle service.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're bringing the nightclubs from the casinos right into the stadium. So, I mean, that's got to be exciting.
So we got to find out if Fitz is going to work his way down into those, because I have a feeling if I know Jason Fitz like I think I do, he's going to be right in the middle of the action there. But
I'd almost be disappointed if he didn't find his way down into those club seats, right? That's a part of the overall experience.
It should be. I said from the beginning, Chris, from the minute they said they were building a stadium in Vegas, you got to make it basically a casino. I wanted craps tables in every corner of this thing. I wanted a Vegas buffet wherever you could line up and get it. They have not returned my calls on those matters, but I'm still hopeful at some point.
So you want them shooting dice out there in the hallways in the stadium?
Listen, if we're there, we might as well be there, Chris. That's all I'm
saying. Fair point. I ain't even mad at you for that.
Not mad one bit. But until we get to there, we're also going to talk to Jen Latta, because we had some surprises yesterday, Chris, and that's kind of where I wanted to start. We go into every season thinking we got some idea about who teams are going to be, especially some of the best ones coming back from last year. And for the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints, that game, to me, Chris, as I look for the biggest surprises from opening weekend, who we could learn the most about from here, I started right there. And we can get to, you know, what we saw on Sunday night. We can get to Chiefs and Browns, but I looked at that matchup, the Saints and the Green Bay Packers, Green Bay fresh off two appearances straight in the NFC title game, getting whooped, full-blown walloped by a team in the Saints that is bringing on a new quarterback in Jameis Winston. I expected them to be good. I thought with Jameis Winston, if he came in and showed that he had taken coaching, they could be a very good team. But to see them throttle a known good in the Green Bay Packers, Chris, that one caught me off guard in a way that I feel like we got to recalibrate now.
Yeah, Mike, I'm with you. That one came out of left field. And typically when you have bad games as a player, there usually is some silver lining, some positives that you can pull out of it. But for the Packers yesterday, there was none of that. I mean, that was ugly. Nobody played well on that team. And the best thing to come out of that game is the fact that you got 16 more. Like, that's one of those games, Mike, where you just burn the tape. We don't even need to look at it when we get back to Green Bay, because there's no point in even trying to correct it. I don't know what was going on with that team, but that is not the Packers team that we saw in the NFC Championship game that gave the Buccaneers a run for their money. So I couldn't help but watch that game and think to myself, the drama from the offseason has found its way into the Packers' regular season in 2021. And you got to wonder whether or not Aaron Rodgers' commitment or lack thereof to this team long-term affects their present and what the team has in terms of their expectations for the upcoming season.
This was Aaron Rodgers, the Packers quarterback, at the press conference after the game, assessing the team, the offense, and his performance.
Well, I felt like our energy was a little bit low. You know, it's felt a little bit San Diego-ish from a couple years ago. We just kind of needed something to get going, and it was the same type of thing, long drives on their side and us not executing. So, you know, we'd had, 10 plays-ish there. And, you know, it's 17-0, and we're in a two-minute mode on our third drive in the first half. So very disjointed possession-wise.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Low energy. Like, Chris, week one, chomping at the bit more often than not. Most teams coming off a camp, hitting each other the entire time, having fans back in the stands this NFL season. I'm looking at a laundry list of reasons why, for a team who knows, all right, we might only have this year to go out and get it, I don't know how it can be from Matt LaFleur's side, from Aaron Rodgers' side, excusable to let your team go out and have one of the assessments from the quarterback be lack of energy.
Yeah, I don't get that either. And you would think that they would have more urgency going about their business just because you know there's a degree of uncertainty when it comes to Aaron Rodgers' future. But we didn't see that yesterday. I mean, they had the fourth down conversion early on in that game, but after that, it was all downhill. And Aaron Rodgers was terrible on third downs. He was 2 of 7. The Packers overall were 1 of 10 on the money down. They weren't able to sustain drives. The quarterback was reckless with the football. I mean, the interception that he threw in the red zone to Davante Adams to open up the second half is inexcusable. It's behind his receiver. He would have been better off just taking a dive and living to fight the next down, which happened to be third down. And then that interception that he threw from his own end zone to the middle of the field, you're looking at that and you're wondering, why the hell are you making that decision? It's double coverage, and the closest guy to the ball was the Saints DB. It didn't make any sense to make that throw. But yet Aaron Rodgers found himself being careless with the ball and not really giving his team a chance, not really giving his offense a chance. You couple that with the fact that they were largely ineffective with the running game and that they were one-dimensional, and that Saints defense just teed off on the Packers offense. So to me, there are no excuses. It's hard to kind of have any big takeaways from this game from an X's and O's standpoint. I think the bigger issue is wondering whether or not this saga that is Aaron Rodgers and Brian Gutekunst out publicly the way that it did, is that going to potentially derail the Packers' 2021 season?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I know Aaron Rodgers did a sit-down with Aaron Andrews before this game, and I get they're doing it, but it just seems like that conversation's getting dragged on way too long. And you know this, Chris, for most people inside a locker room, I'm there to handle my business. I'm there to do what I have to do to get ready for Sundays or Saturdays. And whatever you've got to do, meaning you as my teammate, I'm fine with what you got to do away from the field, as long as when we show up here, you're handling business in the way that we're used to. And if this starts to become a pattern, to be clear, I don't think I'm ready to bet on this being a pattern, Chris. Like, if we're going to play, is this real or is this week one? I'm saying this is week one after an offseason where maybe I didn't give enough weight to Aaron Rodgers not being there and to all this turmoil. But I can't imagine with the parts involved, like you said, especially when the reigning MVP quarterback was the one putting it in harm's way more than anyone, I can't imagine this is something that lingers. I don't know how you feel, though.
Well, I mean, listen, you hope that it doesn't linger, but I mean, the fact is that this team had higher expectations than what we saw and what they did on the field yesterday. Like, there's no reason to come out and get blown out. It's not a true home game for the New Orleans Saints. As a matter of fact, there were more Packers fans in TIAA Stadium than there were Saints fans. So the fact that you ultimately had a friendly environment and you went out there and you laid an egg the way that you did against a New Orleans team that hadn't quite figured out what their identity was with Jameis Winston being their quarterback and had Drew Brees having retired, to me, that's inexcusable. Like, I don't understand how the Packers can have low energy. I don't understand how they can have that kind of lack of execution and think that this is not something that's symptomatic of the problems that they've been dealing with internally throughout the better part of the offseason.
Yeah, I think for the Packers, we're going to have to put a pin in that one. I think for the Saints, we got to recalibrate what we think this team is capable of. They were sort of a wild card coming into this. But, Chris, opening weekend, you looked around. What was the team that surprised you the most?
Oh, it was the Saints, and followed closely by the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, the way that Chandler Jones kicked Taylor Lewan's butt up and down that field in Nashville yesterday, I mean, that was embarrassing. And then to make matters worse, Taylor Lewan went out there and actually wanted to give Chandler Jones a shout-out on social media. Mike, I've been around the NFL 10-plus years. I've never seen a player get beat to sleep like that and then give the guy that did the beating the shout-out. I've never seen that. But the fact that they got dominated the way that they did, I mean, you got to give credit to the Arizona Cardinals. I know the Titans are a well-coached bunch under Mike Vrabel, but to see Cliff Kingsbury's crew come in there and do what they did, and Kyler Murray running around like a human cheat code, I got to tell you, this Cardinals team is one of those teams that you got to watch out for. They made some upgrades this offseason on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. This is going to be a scary team to watch out of the NFC West.
It's a make-or-break year for Cliff Kingsbury, and so far, along with the rest of that division, the NFC West 4-0 to start the young NFL season. So I'm with you. Cardinals, Saints, all big surprises, but we want to hear from you. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on that Dr. Pepper call-in line. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. We want to hear from you, 888-SAY-ESPN. What you saw from week one that you think is real and what you think is just week one. What is real and what is not? 888-729-3776. You can also tweet us at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. We'll hear from Jen Latta in a little bit to check on those Green Bay Packers and see how Wisconsin is this morning. But coming up next, we had one of the marquee matchups from two playoff teams last year, one looking to take the next step. Why there's no such thing as moral victories for the Cleveland Browns after week one. Next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
We all thought the Saints might be good this year, but after throttling the Green Bay Packers, we got questions. And we'll get those answered. Jen Latta going to join us here on Canty and Golic Jr. in about 10 minutes from ESPN Milwaukee. Try and help us figure out what the hell went on there, Chris, because I'm still scratching my head. And you know what doesn't help the cause is I know Aaron Rodgers went on the spiritual journey this offseason. He was out vacationing with the fiance. Yeah, I think he was like a vegan now. He looks kind of like Joe Dirt under the helmet, and it's not helping him how disheveled he looks as he struggled and threw two picks yesterday after a season where he threw five the entire year.
So what you're saying is you're not a fan of the man bun that Aaron Rodgers is sporting right about now.
You know what? The man bun is fine, but when it's leaking out of the back of his helmet, it wasn't all there, Chris, in the way that I'm used to from Aaron.
Yeah, a bit of a grunge look, and that's how it looked in terms of the Packers' offense yesterday. It was just grimy. It was ugly, and there really wasn't a whole lot of positives to take away from it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers finished with a 36.8 passer rating. To put it into context, Mike, you get a 39 just for snapping the ball and spiking it into the ground. That's how bad Aaron Rodgers was yesterday. And it's hard for that Packers offense to get going knowing that it's all built around him being a trigger man.
Our friend Hannah Stuvengin on Twitter tweeted, as far as I'm concerned, I'm in denial that Packers game never happened and it's all a conspiracy. So that was a surprise yesterday. 888-729-3776, 888-ESPN. We wanted to hear the biggest surprise from your viewing of the opening weekend of the NFL. Let's go to Mike in South Jersey. Mike, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What surprised you the most this weekend?
Hey, guys, you know what? I think I'm going to speak for a lot of other people on this one. I think the Steelers rolling into Buffalo, taking a week one victory from the Bills. I'm a Steelers fan, but I know a lot of people are surprised by that one.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, a really wild game. It just felt like a plotter all the way through. But give Pittsburgh credit, not a lot of expectation this year. And they found a way to make a couple of scrappy plays, keep it close, and win this thing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that offense was bad the first few possessions. I mean, I want to say it's the first four or five possessions. They struggled to get anything going, and it really didn't click into place until after they had the big play on special teams with the Miles Killebrew block punt that resulted in a touchdown. So, I mean, that really was the catalyst for the Steelers to get going. We knew that this was a team that had to be led by defense and special teams, so it shouldn't be a surprise that that's what they leaned on in order to get the dub up there in Buffalo.
Yeah, T.J. Watt clearly still good even after the payday there. Two tackles, a tackle for loss.
You know, so what you're saying, the money isn't holding him back is what you're saying?
You know what? I think he's going to be just fine, and I know we heard from Adam Schefter that he went out of the office and immediately started working out after telling Kevin Colbert and company that they've got a deal. So right in the Watt DNA and the narrative. Let's head to Josh in Maine. Josh, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What surprised you the most NFL Weekend 1?
I don't know if I was surprised as much as disappointed, but I'm a diehard Patriots fan, and it seemed like Mac Jones really showed the ability to throw the ball down the field and, you know, put it where only the wide receiver could catch it, and we just kept running the ball over and over and over again. And I feel like if we would have pushed the ball more down the field in the beginning of the game, that game wouldn't even have been close.
Chris, that's an interesting one because it was very clear that Mac Jones operated this offense exactly the way we had seen him do in the preseason, which means they were going according to plan. But that plan very clearly, as Josh pointed out, was to take the air out of the football and not put it in harm's way with Mac. And at that point, it was an overwhelming success.
Yeah, I don't know how you could be a Patriots fan and look at Mac Jones' performance and be disappointed. I mean, I thought the game plan was the right approach from Bill Belichick, knowing that Tua has shown the propensity to turning the ball over at the most inopportune times. And we saw it again early in that fourth quarter. And let's face it, I mean, the Patriots are a Damian Harris fumble away from kicking a field goal or scoring a touchdown on that last drive and winning that ball game. So, I mean, I understand a little bit of the frustration because Mac seemed like he had full command of the offense and maybe Belichick should have given him a little more leash. But when you consider the opponent, when you look at the other sideline and you know what you're dealing with, having Tua as the opposing quarterback, but also that Brian Flores-led Miami Dolphins defense, you just figured the conservative approach would be enough to be able to get the win. Turns out they made an uncharacteristic mistake as far as the Patriots are concerned with those late-game turnovers. But all in all, it was a solid performance, one that you can build on with your young quarterback.
888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. What's the biggest NFL surprise from week one for you? 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll get to more of those, but Chris, you mentioned the good feelings, the bad feelings coming off this weekend, what you can take from it. I heard a lot of people trying to claim moral victory for the Cleveland Browns. They go on the road to Arrowhead. They get an almost win, but then Kansas City does what they generally tend to do, the Michael Myers slow walk up. Just when you think they're dead, he's back in your life here. I don't know how we can justify that, Chris. I know Cleveland's new to expectations, but if you're a Browns fan, I don't know how you're not overwhelmingly frustrated by Baker Mayfield, this offense, and really the special teams chipping in as well, the fumbled punt, the botched punt, being critical late-game breakdowns that hold you back from taking that next step in a spot where you were the dominant team the entire game.
Yeah, Mike, I got to laugh at the idea that there could be a moral victory as far as the Cleveland Browns are concerned with that game yesterday. Like, they were in control of that game the entire first half, and then they just crumbled. And it was all unforced errors as far as I'm concerned. Like, it was the miscues that they had in the second half that kept them from being able to win that game. Like, I'll say this, Mike. I feel like more games are lost than won in the National Football League, and that was a game that the Cleveland Browns lost yesterday more so than the Kansas City Chiefs winning. Because when you consider the two turnovers, then you had the turnover on downs because of the Jamie Gillian punt debacle, and then, of course, you're talking about the blown coverage where Tyreek Hill hits his head on the goalpost 75 yards later. Like, those are the things that championship-caliber teams just don't do. Like, those are the lessons that the Cleveland Browns should have learned last year. But, I mean, the fact that you took the Kansas City Chiefs to the wire again, that shouldn't matter because you did that last year in the AFC divisional round playoff game. Like, this was one of those games that you needed to come out and make a statement to the rest of the National Football League, but more importantly to yourself, that this is going to be a different season for the Cleveland Browns. And unfortunately, Baker Mayfield and the Browns came up small in that spot.
Chris, it's so true. You mentioned to yourself, I've been on plenty of sidelines where things have gone wrong for years in a row for us, and you get into these clutch moments in the fourth quarter, and the minute something goes wrong, you can feel that dead air and that here we go again type thing. And for Cleveland, you're new to this. You got to start to bankroll some of these moments so when you get late in the season, so we're talking about week 17, week 18, the postseason where you should be, based on the clear floor we saw yesterday, you got to create some of that belief on a young team who's learning how to do this at a high level with expectations for the first time. So we'll get plenty more on that as we go along in the show, figure out what is real or what is just week one. But coming up next, we got to find out that answer for the Green Bay Packers. How much of this offense's lull from yesterday is on the quarterback, and how much can we expect to carry forward? We'll get to that next after this word from 5-Hour Energy. All right, guys, did you hit the productivity wall after a big lunch? Well, let 5-Hour Energy Shots help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. Go to 5hourenergy.com today to find over 15 flavors to choose from. With flavors like watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, and peach mango, there is a flavor for literally everyone. But if you're out and about, remember you can always pick up a 5-Hour Energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. Back with Jen Latta after this. It's Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Super Bowl champion Chris Canty. And it's time for some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Because after an offseason full of drama, almost daytime soap opera level of such, in Green Bay with our friends the Packers and their star quarterback Aaron Rodgers, Packers fans were rewarded with whatever the hell that was yesterday. And for more on what that was, we head to the Goodyear hotline to talk to our friend Jen Latta, ESPN reporter and one of the hosts of Jen, Gabe, and Chewy on ESPN Milwaukee. And Jen, have you guys figured out what the hell that was yesterday then? Because I haven't.
No. No. No one knows what happened yesterday, right? Like, I put it out this morning on Twitter, guys. This was absolutely the bizarro Packers offense, right? Because for all of the reasons that the Packers were successful, number one red zone efficiency, right? No points, two turnovers in the red zone. They were the number one scoring offense in 2020. They scored 3 points. That's the fewest points in the league by a team in week one, obviously pending the outcome of tonight's Ravens-Las Vegas game. So, like, Aaron Rodgers never throws interceptions, certainly never throws two in a quarter. And then, of course, Aaron Rodgers, a consistent fantasy, you know, quarterback. People, you know, build their entire teams around Aaron Rodgers, knowing he's going to light up the scoreboard. 1.3 points. Like, it was the most bizarro Packers offense in all of the years I've ever covered this team. And that's quite a number of years, guys. So, no, I don't know what it was. I do know, though, that Aaron Rodgers opened himself and the rest of the Packers team up to this criticism and up to the skepticism because of all of the drama he created this offseason. Like, you can't have one job, which is to be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, and go to your bosses, stomping your feet and pointing fingers and ask for more jobs, and then go out there and do the one job you have that poorly, right? Like, then people are going to go, what the hell, man? And that's exactly what people are doing today.
Jen, one of the things that Mike and I were scratching our heads about is Aaron Rodgers' post-game press conference remarks where he said that the team didn't have juice or they didn't play with energy. And we were trying to figure out how the hell can something like that happen on week one of the regular season?
No idea. And the leaders of this team, which of course are Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, they have to figure that out. You know, there was talk beforehand about the weather and the heat. And I think, like, in a pregame report that Aaron Andrews gave, like, you start worrying, like, wait a minute, hold on. The game hasn't even started and they're talking about the heat and, like, maybe that affecting these guys. Like, it just was all signs pointing to this team was not ready. And I don't know if that goes down to preparation by the coach. I don't know if it just is simply execution. Like, you as a former player, I'd be curious where you stand on that. When a team just wholly underperforms, where do you point the finger?
I think you have to point it at the leadership, and it starts with the quarterback because the position by nature is a leadership position, and with all the drama that Aaron had this offseason, it's fair to question whether or not that's affecting the other 52 guys in the locker room, knowing that this guy is not committed to this team beyond this year, and maybe he's not fully committed to what they're trying to get done in 2021.
Jen Latta,
yeah, and I think a lot of people look at it and go, you know, you said you didn't know if you wanted to be here, or that was at least the report, and you were 50-50 almost retiring. So what, do you just flip a switch? I mean, you were 50-50 maybe not going to play football with us again. You know, and I had said, and I've been saying this for weeks on our show, guys, you have to stop talking about it. At some point, continuing to have the conversations with the various media outlets, with the Aaron Andrews, with the Pat McAfees, et cetera, your teammates are hearing that, and that forces the conversation to continue. Aaron Rodgers, as we know, picks and chooses who he wants to do media with, right? I think the number of people who get no's from Aaron Rodgers when you put in a media request is pretty lengthy. So if he doesn't want to talk about something, you know he can dictate the conversation. So he could have said to any of these people, hey, guys, it doesn't do my team any good to continue having these conversations as we're inching closer to the season. Let's talk about something else. Right. And then the media outlets have to decide whether or not they think the something else is going to be as compelling as all the stuff that has happened. But, you know, he did a sit down with Aaron Andrews that aired on Fox this weekend. And of course, still talking, defending his position, why, he, you know, this all played out the way that it did. And I don't think that does your team any good.
It's going to be interesting to watch this going forward, try and gauge whether this is a week one problem or if this is something that persists. But like you said, Jen, at some point, the guy with the controller in his hands and Aaron Rodgers gets to control a lot of that. Everyone, check out Jen, Gabe, and Chewy on ESPN Milwaukee. Follow her on Twitter, at Jen Latta, doing great stuff with the College Game Day crew as well for us here at ESPN. Jen, hopefully we talk to you after a better week two next week.
Sounds good, guys. Talk to you later.
Awesome stuff from Jen, as always, there. And Chris, I think she brought up what's really at the crux of this is, if you keep putting it at the forefront of the conversation, eventually that's the thing that's going to cause actual dissent in the locker room. Not this both quarterbacks thing, or if people were in Jordan Love camp or Aaron Rodgers camp, like we heard over the summer. It's, all right, is this going to continue to preoccupy if you're not handling business on the field?
No question about it. And like I was saying about the quarterback spot, like, a part of their jobs are to set the agenda for the rest of the guys on the team. And with Aaron Rodgers continuing to talk about the drama that played out this offseason and what his future holds, everything being a beautiful mystery, like, that doesn't instill that level of confidence, and that doesn't kind of give the marching orders to the rest of the guys on the team in terms of what they're trying to get done with this season. And so I think that's part of kind of the malaise that's over this organization, this cloud, so to speak, And I don't know how they find their way out of it if Aaron Rodgers doesn't put to bed all of the conversation about what his future was hold.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Again, that was one of the biggest surprises from week one. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. What was your biggest surprise from week one in the NFL season? We'll get to more of those calls, but coming up next, we got to head out to Chris Canty's neck of the woods and try and figure out what the biggest problem is for Big Blue. We will do that after this word from Dollar Shave Club. All right, guys, you want to look like $1 million but only spend a handful of bucks? Upgrade to the Dollar Shave Club with the Ultimate Shave Starter Set for only $5. Get a six-blade razor, prep scrub, shave butter, and post-shave do for a noticeably smooth shave. Plus free shipping. Razors can be expensive, so don't spend all that money on a mediocre shave. Dollar Shave Club. It's what dreams are shaved of. After the starter set, razors ship at regular price. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/gojo. That's dollarshaveclub.com/gojo. Welcome to the club. What went on with the Giants, and is it salvageable? Next on ESPN Radio. Dan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Before we get to the biggest Birdman hand-wringing.gif moment so far of the NFL season, because we've got one injury that might affect one free agent quarterback, we want to hear from you on the biggest surprise from week one in the NFL. 888-729-3776. And let's head to Curtis in California. Curtis, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What surprised you?
Hey, can you guys hear me all right?
We can hear you. What was your big surprise from week one, Curtis?
Oh, okay. My biggest surprise was the O-line for the offensive, or the O-line for the Los Angeles Chargers. Everybody kept talking smack about their depth. And Brian Bulaga goes out, and Storm Norton comes in and crushes it and helps him get the victory they needed.
Yeah, Chris, cannot say enough things. Certainly, we saw that depth in the preseason was something that came under fire from their head coach. But going up against a Washington football team and having your rookie top first-round draft pick, Rashawn Slater, look the way he did, has to have a lot of Chargers fans sleeping a little better at night.
Oh, yeah, Rashawn Slater just erased Chase Young out of that game. He was quiet as a church mouse. I mean, he usually is a disruptive force. I mean, people were making noise about Chase Young just transforming not only that defense, but that entire team last year, helping to lead them to the playoffs. He was non-existent in that game. Now, a lot of it had to do with Rashawn Slater and his play, so you got to give credit where credit is due. That offensive line for the Chargers seems like it's turning the corner. The other thing that I will say that impressed me about that ball game was just the poise of Justin Herbert down the stretch, because the kid throws an interception, beginning of the fourth quarter, Asante Samuel Jr. comes back and forces the fumble, gets the turnover, and then Justin Herbert, three plays later, throws a touchdown pass. Like, being able to have that kind of mettle, that kind of fortitude, make a mistake and not dwell on it, able to move past it and ultimately set your team up to win a ball game on the road, on an East Coast, like, to me, that was really impressive from Justin Herbert. So this Chargers team, that was a gritty win yesterday, and Chargers fans need to get used to it. The NFL needs to be ready for it, because that team is going to be around this year.
They had 13 completions on third down yesterday for Justin Herbert.
Yep.
You mentioned so much of his rookie campaign was him creating on the fly, him creating under pressure. If he's actually got time to sit back there and deal, that could be very scary for a team that was 7-9 last year looking to take the next step here. We'll get to more of those calls. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. But Chris, we also saw earlier the unfortunate news for the Washington football team. They got to place their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, on IR with a hip injury after game one. Taylor Heinicke finished that game out. But as we sit here now, we were all looking forward to the Fitzmagic roller coaster. But I'm wondering if Ron Rivera and Cam Newton, who we last saw on his old high school football field talking with his dad about his free agency and the fact that he's not retiring, if that reunion might be coming sooner than expected.
I don't know, man. 8-Ball says doubtful with that, just because we know Ron Rivera and his stance when it comes to COVID vaccinations to bring in Cam Newton. I'm not sure that that's something that he wants to sign up for, especially coming off of the cancer bout that he had last year while he was dealing with during the regular season. So I'm not sure that they're going to be ringing Cam Newton's phone anytime soon. But the question is whether or not Taylor Heinicke can step in and get it done. And here's a guy that they gave a contract extension to this offseason. I mean, I'm not sure that they anticipated having to thrust him into duty, but that's where we are right now. Is that going to be enough, coupled with that defense, to be able to sustain them until Ryan Fitzpatrick gets back? That's the question that the Washington football team is going to have to answer. Keep it in mind, they've got a short week to prepare because the New York Giants are rolling into town on Thursday night. So it'll be interesting to see how Ron Rivera handles that transition, that handoff from Ryan Fitzpatrick to Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah, short week, certainly less than ideal, but I don't know. Based off what we saw in week one, Chris, the Giants might be a fairly soft landing spot for whatever quarterback you're going to put out there, because this Giants team, unfortunately, looked to me like the same old New York Giants that we've seen under Daniel Jones, under Dave Gettleman right now. They lose 27-13 at home to the Denver Broncos, and Chris, it was just marred by the same mistakes that we've seen in the past. Now, I give all the credit in the world to Teddy Bridgewater, who went out, won a job that he probably wasn't supposed to win when he got there, and quarterbacked this team really well on the road in week one. But for the Giants, defensively, there were miscues. But more than anything to me, Chris, this offense is still too inconsistent. And when it came down to it, Daniel Jones was putting the ball on the mat in a way that just looked too familiar for me to buy into them right now.
Yeah, that one was a killer, man. Daniel Jones fumbling the ball after he picks up the third down conversion. All the guy had to do was slide. He only needed 2 yards. He got 7, but the problem is he didn't get down. He took on the contact. He ends up putting the ball on the ground, and that's a turnover that resulted in 3 points for the Denver Broncos, pushed it to a 20-7 lead. And at that point in the game with 12 minutes left, the way that the Giants offense had been rolling all day long, or not rolling, to be more accurate with it, it just put them up against it. So, yeah, that's another critical mistake that Daniel Jones made. And coming into this year, we talked about it. He's got to cut down on the turnovers. You're talking about having 40 turnovers in 2 years plus one game. That's too much. It's too many turnovers for your team to overcome. And at some point, you know, you got to start scratching your head and wondering, will the kid ever figure out how to protect the football? Because yesterday was a prime example of his turnovers costing you a game.
Yeah, this is it kind of reminds me in some ways of the other quarterback we just got used to seeing in New York. Like, that's who Sam Darnold was when he was with the Jets. That's who Sam Darnold was, careless with the football in a different way, when he was at USC. And so I can't act surprised when someone tells me who they are over and over again. I got to believe them. Now, Sam Darnold, we're seeing good week one career renaissance with the Carolina Panthers against his old team in the Jets. But for Daniel Jones, where he's at now, clearly something within him and this team right now has not gotten that message across, whether it's Jason Garrett and the coaching staff not being able to coach that out of him, or just him as a player. I mean, he's third-year pro at this point. He's a guy who's got to start to take some of these things into his own hand. I know he's not getting a lot of help. Like, any game you end as the Giants with Daniel Jones as your leading rusher indicates there are other problems here. But that one is always going to be the most critical, because giving the football away in a game that was close for a fair amount of this time, that can't be the difference. That can't continue to be the difference.
No, it can't. And the thing about the Giants offense yesterday, the offensive line didn't get a lot of push at the point of attack in the run game, but they did keep Daniel Jones relatively clean in the pass game. I mean, you had a couple of plays, a couple of instances where Von Miller was able there to get in there and create some havoc. But by and large, they kept Daniel Jones's jersey clean, and quite frankly, he just didn't deliver in terms of being able to get the ball to his playmakers where they could do some things with it. I mean, he did have a couple of throws, one to Sterling Shepard that ended up being a catch and run for a touchdown. He had a nice completion to Kenny Golladay to move the sticks, but I mean, it was too inconsistent. It wasn't enough, and so when it came down to, you know, being able to match what the Denver Broncos offense was doing, the Giants offense came up small. One thing I will also say about the Giants defense, they weren't able to get pressure on Teddy Bridgewater, and that's why Teddy was able to distribute the football the way that he did yesterday. The drive that he had right before the half, that two-minute drill that ended up with the touchdown to Tim Patrick, and then coming out of halftime, marching the team 16 plays, 75 yards, and converting on a fourth down at the goal line for a touchdown, that ultimately was what allowed the Broncos to take control, and that was because of the lack of pass rush from the Giants defense. So those are the two things in my book that the Giants got to get cleaned up: being able to protect the football, the quarterback, and then making sure that they can find some pass rush.
And they've got to do it on a short week. Again, the Giants and the Washington football team on Thursday night. Washington might have to make making moves and get a new quarterback in there.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
But while they search for answers for a game that's coming up Thursday, that'll be the start of week two, we got to finish off week one tonight. What the moves around running backs for both the Ravens and the Raiders say about the odds heading into tonight's game, next on ESPN Radio.